Governor Ferrin?
Present.
I understand Governor Galitova is on the telephone?
Present.
And Governor Mullen was going to call in. I'm not sure if he has yet or not. Governor Mullen, have you called in?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Excellent. We have all five board members.
Excellent. Thank you. Is there any public comment on any matter not on the agenda? Seeing none, I'd like to recognize our CEO, Steve Berberich, who has a few words he'd like to share.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and governors. A couple of things I just want to make sure I highlight before we go into the meeting today. First, this is a special meeting that was called, and I applaud the board for making this a high priority. The congestion revenue rights, it's clear to all of us, certainly the executive management team, and I know to the board of governors themselves, that the continued and persistent shortfall of the auction revenues versus what we're paying out is a major issue, and I just want to make sure I highlight the fact that this meeting clearly shows the importance of this to all of us. So we'll go through that proposal today. The second thing I'd like to note, and I want to make sure that everybody's well aware of, that the summer assessment that we sent out now a month or two ago clearly highlighted that we're going to have very, very tight conditions this summer. I want and repeatedly will highlight the fact this is going to be a persistent condition for summers to come. This summer, though, we have a very high likelihood of at least a stage two emergency. That does not mean load shed, but rather that means we're down to minimal reserves. So I'm interested in making sure that this is front and center for everyone, and to make sure that if we call for energy reductions that we have a good response. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So we'll move right away to the main issue today, which is congestion revenue rights auction efficiency. Mr. Casey.
Let me briefly interject on that we did receive two public comment letters on this item, one from PowerX and one from six cities of Anaheim, Azusa, Banning, Colton, Pasadena, and Riverside. And those have been provided to the board for the record. Yep.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Just before Greg begins with his presentation, just to remind you, back in March of this year, you approved certain changes to the CR market rules that were designed to decrease the auction revenue shortfall that Steve referred to. These were referred to our Track 1 changes, and they're currently pending approval before FERC. We do expect an order any day now, so we'll keep you posted on that. But as you may recall, at the May board meeting, we also committed to come back to you early summer with additional changes to further improve the CR market design. The reason we phased the policy like this was because the Track 1 changes had implementation needs that required approval earlier, so this was intentional to phase the design like this. But I do want to clarify the Track 1B changes, which we'll be presenting to you today for approval. We are looking to implement those for the 2019 CR process as well. So pending, of course, FERC approval, our goal is to implement both the Track 1A and Track 1B proposals as part of the 2019 annual CR process. So Greg Cook, our Executive Director of Market Infrastructure Policy, will be presenting the Track 1B proposal to you today. But before he begins, I want to recognize the team that worked on this, particularly Perry Servideo, who just did an outstanding job leading this very challenging policy initiative under a very aggressive timeline. I don't frankly think we could have got to the finish line where we are today without Perry's brilliant leadership on this. And he had a lot of help along the way. There was a great team that worked on this. Brad Cooper, Danielle Tavel, Guillermo Batista, Jim McClain, James Lynn, and George Angelides were also very instrumental in developing this proposal. So I want to thank them for their excellent work. And with that, I'll turn it over to Greg.
Thanks, Keith. Good afternoon, everyone. So this is our proposal for the Track 1B changes. Again, trying to target issues that we've seen with the CRR auction efficiency. So if you recall back in March when we brought the Track 1A proposal, we were really, that proposal was really targeted on the auction efficiency. And we're talking, again, when we're talking about auction efficiency, we're comparing the revenues that we received from the auction CRRs to the payments that then go back out to those auction CRRs. And what we've seen, you know, over the past several years is that those revenues have been, the revenues that we've received have been sufficiently less than the payments that have gone out. What Track 1B is targeting is really the revenue inadequacy issue, which is very linked to the auction efficiency issue as well, which I'll get to in a second. But when we're talking about revenue inadequacy, what we're looking at here is comparison of the payments to all CRRs, so that's both the auction and the allocated CRRs, compared to the amount of revenue that we collect through congestion in the day-ahead market. And so that revenue inadequacy occurs when we have more restrictive constraints modeled in the day-ahead market than what was modeled in the CRR auction. And so when we look at over time, what this chart shows is that over the past 3 years, we've had significant amounts of auction revenue shortfalls, but also revenue inadequacy. And you can also see from this chart that there is a pretty strong correlation between the two. And a lot of that is due to the fact that we're seeing, you know, we've seen when we did the analysis, we had a lot of very low-priced CRRs that can tend to have high payouts when there's these differences in modeling between the CRR auction and what is actually happening in the day-ahead market. So that's why we believe it's, you know, it's important to address the revenue inadequacy issue as well, because that will help to address the auction efficiency that we've been trying to address. The levels of revenue inadequacy have been fairly significant over the last 3 years. They range by month, and you can see they range roughly from anywhere from $2 million to $20 million a month. You know, on an annual basis, we're looking at right around, they've averaged about $100 million a year over the past 3 years. So under our current design, you know, we believe there's a lot of problems with it. First, we believe it's somewhat inequitable, and because we allocate all of the revenue inadequacy to essentially to load. And by doing so, that's different than what a lot of most of the other markets do, and where they allocate that revenue inadequacy back to all CRR holders, not just load. Another issue we see with this is that there's really no consideration of the location of the constraints that are causing the revenue inadequacy. And the issue here is you could have a constraint, say, up in PG&E's area, and then, you know, load in Southern California is also having to pay for that revenue inadequacy, so it provides, you know, very little incentives for transmission owners to manage their outages in a way to limit the impacts on CRRs. Next, we also find that this does continue to provide these incentives for financial traders in particular to procure low-priced congestion revenue rights that have these large payouts due to differences between the auction and day-ahead market model. And again, that is leading to a lot of the auction inefficiency and revenue inadequacy that we've been seeing. And then finally, what we've noticed, we've been releasing thousands of megawatts of transmission capacity in our annual process that ultimately becomes unavailable when we get to the monthly process. And that, too, is leading to significant amounts of revenue inadequacy. So we're proposing two enhancements to address these issues. The primary enhancement is putting in place a partial funding mechanism for our CRRs. And again, this is, most other markets have partial funding type mechanisms in their markets as well. We're proposing to do this by allocating the revenue inadequacy to the congestion revenue rights holders in proportion to their flow overage constraint. Now, I have an example here in a minute that I'll show you what we mean by that. But we think by doing this, it helps to alleviate a lot of those issues that we have under the current design and provide significant benefits. First off, that we're ensuring that the congestion revenue rights holders are only seeing payments that are aligned with the available transmission capacity in the day-ahead market. Also, we believe this is a more equitable allocation of the revenue inadequacy because it can go to all congestion revenue rights holders, and it's done on that locational basis as opposed to just being spread to load as it is today. And it has the benefit of mitigating those profits that are made purely on those differences between the auction model and the day-ahead market model. Again, that's been causing significant issues for the auction efficiency as well as revenue inadequacy. And then the second piece of our proposal is to reduce the amount of system capacity that we're releasing in the annual process from 75% as we do today down to 65%. We've done some analysis that shows just by doing this 10% reduction, we can resolve the majority of the annual auction infeasibilities. So here's an example of how our partial funding proposal would work. This is a somewhat simplified example, but just to give you the idea of how it would work, you know, assume that we have $10 a megawatt hour of congestion charges throughout the day. So that means that the price differential between node A and B is $10. Also assume we've got 800 megawatts of CRR flow over a transmission line that has a 1,000 megawatt limit. Now, if we have a reduced limit when we ultimately get to the day-ahead market down to 500 megawatts, this is going to lead to a revenue inadequacy issue because we now have a limit that is less than the CRR flows over the line. So under the current design, essentially the CRR payment would be we would pay out the full 800 megawatts of CRR flow. So we'd multiply that times the congestion price times 24 hours a day, so that we would pay out $192,000 to the CRR holders. But then when we're collecting congestion rent in the day-ahead market, we would only collect the 500 megawatts since the line limit has been reduced times the $10 of times the 24 hours. So we would only collect $120,000. So this would result in a shortfall of $72,000, which would be the revenue inadequacy that would be charged back to load. So what we're proposing here is to allocate that revenue inadequacy back to the CRR holders. So for in this example, we assume we have three CRR holders over that path. The first one owns 400 megawatts of the 800 megawatts of CRR flow, and the second two both have 200 megawatts. So in this, we would allocate back that revenue inadequacy in proportion to their flow over the line. So CRR1, we would take back $36,000 of that $72,000 revenue inadequacy from them, and then $18,000 from the other two CRR holders. So thereby, we've essentially allocated out the revenue inadequacy back to those CRR holders, so their ultimate payments for those CRRs would be reduced by those amounts. Looking at the second part of our proposal where we're lowering the annual capacity released in the CRR auction from 75% to 65%, what we found that by, as this chart shows, at 75% level, when we looked at, and this is season four in 2017, we had almost 8,000 megawatts of infeasible CRRs in the annual process. But if we were to lower that down to 65%, we could reduce 4,200 megawatts of those infeasibilities. So we can get rid of the majority of the infeasibilities by just reducing the amount released in the annual auction by 10%. So we believe that this is a significant improvement. It would provide much more certainty as for the CRRs that we're releasing in the annual auction that they will ultimately be feasible, and also will reduce the amounts that we would ultimately have to reduce the CRR payments back in our CRR and our partial funding proposal as well, because more of the CRRs will ultimately be feasible when we get to the day-ahead market. This is generally better aligned with how much other ISOs release in this time frame as well. It's somewhat difficult to get an apples-to-apples comparison here because they all release them on different timelines. But when we tried to look at the period between 4 to 16 months forward, as you can see, California ISO today, we release 75%, which is generally higher than what the other ISOs do. You have Texas releasing between 40 and 55% during this time, ISO New England 50%, Midwest ISO 60%. And then the New York ISO, they have a phased release where they go between 5 and 100%. You can see on the footnote there at the bottom, so it's somewhat of a difficult comparison. And then PJM, although it says it's 100%, they do a lot of adjustments to the amount of transmission that they're saying is available prior to allocating it out. So they adjust for things like loop flows, and they look at historical flow ratings during hot days, those types of things. So although they release 100% of the capacity, it's an adjusted amount of what they expect the transmission system to actually be capable of doing. And then Southwest Power Pool also does between 0 and 60% at that time. So we think our 65% proposal is It's still more on the high side, but more in line with what the other markets do. So we went through the stakeholder process. At the end, I think most stakeholders do support the proposal, our partial funding proposal. In particular, the Department of Market Monitoring, Southern California Edison, six cities, and the CPUC. I think they do see this as an improvement to our current design. However, I would say I think they do still ultimately would prefer to going with more of the willing counterparty type proposal that we discussed at the last board meeting. We did continue to further look at that through the stakeholder process, but again, we feel that the combination of the changes that you approved in Track 1A, along with these new changes, that these will have a significant impact on the auction efficiency, and while at the same time not having a risk to the wholesale energy markets that we believe getting rid of the auction could have. Then there's another group of stakeholders that oppose the proposal, primarily because they would like to see different ways to allocate the revenue inadequacy, in particular doing it more on a pooling basis to all CRRs as opposed to our constraint-by-constraint approach. We did consider this, but in the end, we think that our approach provides stronger incentives both for the TOs to manage their outages as well as that strong incentives for traders to not target those low-priced CRRs that only pay out due to modeling differences. And then finally, other stakeholders would recommend that we're doing too much change at one time. We should first wait and see how the changes that are already taking place under Track 0, which is better including outages into our CRR models, and the Track 1A efforts have, what impacts those have on the markets before making these changes. Again, we see these Track 1B changes as complementary to the Track 1A changes. And then finally, on the proposal to reduce the annual system capacity from 75% to 65%, you know, this was actually a recommendation that came out of the Market Surveillance Committee opinion. We looked at this, and again, we think that there's good justification to lower the amount that we are releasing in the annual auction. You know, it will provide more certainty for the CRs we're releasing at that time frame. The California Department of Water Resources brought up some concerns that it could somewhat impede their ability to obtain congestion revenue rights that they want to get in the annual process. You know, although this will restrict it somewhat, we believe that it is better representation of the amount of certainty that we have at that time frame and the amount of capacity that we're releasing. And then on our conference call, Pacific Gas and Electric raised some concerns that it could prevent them from receiving some congestion rights that would have been revenue sufficient from being released. And we looked at this, and although this is possible, we think that, you know, that cost is much outweighed by the benefits that we get by ensuring that we're releasing a more feasible set of congestion revenue rights. So with that, we recommend that the board approve the Track 1B proposal. Again, it has a lot of benefits. Particularly, it aligns the congestion revenue rights payments to the available transmission capacity in the day-ahead market, provides for a more equitable allocation of that revenue inadequacy. Now that we're not just doing it to load, we're doing it to all congestion rights holders. It provides strong mitigation to those incentives to bid for those congestion revenue rights that have that are low priced but have these high payouts when there's differences in the market model and in the actual day-ahead model. And that we also are committing that we realize these are some significant changes to the CRR market, so we will commit to include analysis and data in our monthly market performance reports so that we have transparency on the actual impacts of this proposal as we move forward into next year. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do board members have any questions for Mr. Cook? Angelina or Richard on the phone?
No questions here.
Thank you, Angelina. So we have several requests for public comment. First, Ellen Wolf from Western Power Trading Forum. And after that, Catherine Hackney from Southern California Edison.
Hey,
thank you, Chairman, Governors, and ISO Executive Team. I'm Ellen Wolf from the Western Power Trading Forum, and I'm happy to be here again to make a comment about CRRs. You've gotten a lot of CR proposals in the last few months, a lot of proposal elements, and I imagine the complexity and subtlety of them are a bit overwhelming, and I think if I were you, I would tend to give the staff a lot of deference in their recommendation. Nevertheless, I'm here today at a minimum so that you understand why WPTF supports part of the ISO staff proposal and opposes other parts of the ISO staff proposals. So in particular, we support proposal elements that get at the root cause of the problem, namely the infeasibility of the CRRs. And in particular, in this Track 1B, the ISO proposal to reduce the annual release amount will do that. It will ensure that there's a much more certainty that what's released in the annual process will still be feasible when we get to the day-ahead market. So we completely support that part of the proposal. WPTF opposes parts of the ISO's proposal that don't get at this root cause. And in this one, Track 1B, the ISO proposal to adjust or to allocate the shortfalls to CRR holders is one of those elements. I think we believe that it is premature to do this. You know, there are these Track 0 changes underway, Track 1A that's coming, this first aspect of Track 1B that will reduce the revenue inadequacy. And so we don't even know at this point whether there will be a persistent shortfall or not to allocate. So that certainly is in the back of our mind. But that aside, WPTF would certainly support a proposal if it was cost causation based. But this one's not. So for example, in the New York ISO, the ISO allocates shortfalls to transmission owners when the transmission owners submit late outages that cause infeasibilities. And, for example, Dr. Harvey from the MSC has made a lot of comments during the MSC meeting about how effective that proposal has been because it does affect the underlying revenue insufficiency. But the staff in this case says that they can't do that proposal on this fast track, and they'll consider something of that nature in Track 2, but not in this Track 1B. And instead, they propose to allocate the shortfall to CRR holders. But the problem is the CRR holders can't do anything about the revenue insufficiency. So it's a bit of a dilemma. So we have this complicated set of algorithms, if you've looked at the paper, all these equations that in themselves have some complexities and potential unintended consequences. And we're going to make this allocation to CRR holders, and that in itself could cause the CRR holders that are bidding in the auction to pay less for their CRRs, and thereby increase the auction revenue shortfall because they're not guaranteed that they'll get full payment on their CRRs. So WPTF has these concerns that because this isn't based on cost causation and could have these unintended consequences, we don't support this type of shortfall cost allocation. So in short, we support the reduction of release quantities in the annual process and recommend that you support that as well. And we don't support this particular cost revenue shortfall allocation and would ask you to consider directing the ISO to defer this part of the proposal to Track 2 when it can be considered in a longer time horizon and also when we've seen the benefits of the other measures play out on the level of the shortfall. So thanks again for considering our comments. I appreciate it very much, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Ms. Wolf? Thank you very much. Catherine Hackney from Southern California Edison, then followed by Mark Smith.
Good afternoon, Chair Olson, Governors, and ISO Executive Management. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. Catherine Hackney, Southern California Edison. I may have said that. First of all, we would like to express our thanks and appreciation to staff. As Dr. Casey noted, this is a particularly complex and contentious issue, and the way that they've been able to navigate to date to capture efficiencies and reduce revenue shortfalls is really commendable, and we very much appreciate that. We would also like to thank the board for its direction given March 22nd to staff to include consideration of the willing counterparty in this effort. And on April 10th, Southern California Edison was granted the opportunity to share a proposal for willing counterparties. About a month later, a straw proposal was released that said rather definitively that that approach would not be pursued. On June 18th, the Department of Market Monitoring sent a memo to the board indicating that because the fundamental flaws in the market were not cured in the proposal before you today, that transmission ratepayers would continue to be paying charges they might not otherwise in the current in the proposal. DMM went on to recommend that ISO seriously consider the willing counterparty proposal in Track 2. And in doing so, there would be an opportunity for a straw proposal that dealt specifically with that issue, an opportunity to, for parties to kind of air and debate and consider the pluses and minuses of transitioning from where we are to a different construct. So we respectfully and enthusiastically join DMM in requesting that the willing counterparty proposal be considered in Track 2. And again, but thank you very much for all the work to date. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Hackney?
I think it's a question more for, have we put the willing counterparty option to bed, or is it still open in Track 2?
Well, frankly, I think we believe, and I think Dr. Bushnell will have a chance and when he makes his comment, that there's a fundamental flaw in the willing counterparty proposal. And so we think at a conceptual level, it doesn't have a lot of merit. So we don't have, Greg, please chime in here if you feel differently. But I think on the Track 2, our primary focus would be to explore some of the other options that were mentioned, such as Ms. Wolf's suggestion about are there other ways to allocate the revenue deficiency. MSC has been advocating for maybe something like a price floor for CRRs, other things we can do. But I think the willing counterparty proposal, in our view, is so draconian and would be so disruptive to the fundamentals of the energy market that at a conceptual level, we don't see merit in pursuing it. I don't know, Greg, is there anything more you want to say?
Yeah, no, I would echo that. I mean, I think what we really looked at, what we believe that the combination of the Track 1A and the Track 1B are going to have a significant impact on these issues. You know, we need to first off see how those impact the market next year. We think, those are hopefully going to largely solve these issues. We'll continue to look at it. As Keith mentioned, there's been other enhancements that we can continue to pursue on top of that, kind of in line with the direction we've been going. But, from the start of this, we've been looking at, the significant analysis that was done to really understand the root drivers of the inefficiencies that we've been seeing and try and target those. Because, as Keith mentioned, we think that the CRR auction in itself provides significant benefits to the wholesale energy market. And, we don't want to inadvertently lose all those benefits by trying to solve this problem. And, we can go into details, but we did, seriously consider the willing counterparty proposal, but there were serious implementation challenges with it, in particular that we found that it would be very unlikely that these counterparties could even find each other because of the number of nodes on the system. The CRR auction today helps to enable market participants to do efficient forward contracting. We think forward contracting is a vital element of our market. If we learned anything from the energy crisis, we want to make sure that market participants are forward contracting in our market, particularly as we start having more and more smaller LSEs in the market as well. They need to have access to these CRRs on the same basis as everyone else. It's going to be important for them to be able to obtain those, these types of instruments to help them with their forward contracting as well. So, there's a whole number of reasons we looked at, and we're just very concerned that when we're looking at the costs and benefits, that the auction does provide some significant benefits by allowing all market participants access to this kind of instrument in our market, and we believe it's important, and we believe we can address a lot of the issues that we've solved through the proposals we've put forward before you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Followed by Tony Braun.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Board. ISO Executive Management. My name is Mark Smith. I represent both Calpine, the generating company, and Calpine, the load-serving entity. Let me start my comments with recognizing somebody who hasn't been here for a while. Mr. Doughty, good to see you back. You were missed. In terms of my position on this matter, I strongly agree with what Ellen Wolf said. I won't repeat what she said, but I will try to put that even into simpler terms from the standpoint of an entity seeking to hedge congestion costs. Today's market with full funding of CRRs allows me to get a clean hedge between my generation node and a delivery point and able to sell to someone else. The new proposal, which is partial funding, gives me a dirty hedge, gives me the ability to pay for a dirty hedge. That is, I am not guaranteed in any way that I will be compensated for the investment in that hedge at the full value of the congestion. As a matter of fact, most likely when I need it the most, when congestion is the highest, the hedge will be the dirtiest because of this partial funding proposal. In that regard, I think, and I would presume, that this proposal, at least as it relates to partial funding, creates exactly the outcome that the ISO fears and attempts to avoid by partial funding. That is, it's going to reduce bid prices into the auction, my view, in a way that will result, again, in a new form or a different form of revenue inadequacy. It is one of the two components that Greg Cook talked about earlier. So we don't support the partial funding. We do support the second piece of this. It makes a ton of sense. You saw the chart, which is really compelling, that showed that at least for the historic period, if you reduce the offerings of capacity from what the ISO does today only by 10%, by going from 75% in the annual auction to 65% in the annual auction, you reduce the infeasibilities by 65%, more than half. A majority of the infeasibilities that we experienced completely go away. Now, there's not an exact correlation between infeasibilities and congestion, but I bet you it's damn strong. So, by the second portion of this proposal, the ISO will be dramatically, our view, reducing the revenue shortfalls. That in combination with the phase zero and the phase 1A stuff that's moving forward should be sufficient for the ISO to feel confident to take a break and see how this stuff is working out before you go to a proposal for partial funding. So, very simply put, we support part of it, which is reducing the annual capacity. We oppose and will oppose, if you so approve, the move to partial funding in the next venue. I'd be happy to respond to any questions you might have.
Any questions for Mr. Smith?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Tony Braun from CMUA.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Tony Braun on behalf of the California Municipal Utilities Association. No breaks, by the way, per Mr. Smith there. No more breaks on this issue because we've been at it long enough. We support you moving forward today with the proposal that's before you. We believe it is likely to result in improvements to the shortfalls that we've been seeing for several years now. That said, as Mr. Cook pointed out, we do have some reservations and trepidations about what the future might hold. And so I'd like to speak a little bit about that. This is a very complicated issue. Certainly, it is mostly beyond my technical pay grade on these matters. It's ever-changing. And we can expect, I think, that the market participant behavior will change as the results, as the market design rules change. And so I think there is likely to be unintended consequences or things that just we don't expect. So I think we need to remain on our toes. The other thing I think we know, and I think we've dispositively shown by a little spade work, is that there's not a lot of entities that have significant physical delivery obligations in California that are taking advantage of purchasing CRRs out of the auction. Mr. Smith's folks may be an exception to that. We also know that many of the small market participants are actually CMUA members. CCAs, in contrast, tend to be much larger than the CMUA members. They get allocated CRRs. They are already participating. They already have hedges because they pay for the transmission. 75% of the auction CRRs are held by entities that have no physical energy position in California's market. So I think we need to keep that in mind when we're considering just, is there really a lot of risk to damages to our wholesale energy market as we move forward? So we actually have two asks, and one I think has been answered by Mr. Cook, if I heard him correctly, and that is the ask that six cities made with respect to data in the monthly reports. We think this is important enough to take that extra step to make sure we have transparency and we can move forward. The other ask is not to wait so long to commence on phase two. We know the ISO doesn't like willing counterparties. That is abundantly clear. But there's a lot of other ideas that six cities have thrown out, that the BAMEX and Silicon Valley Power have thrown out, that the Market Surveillance Committee has thrown out. There is no reason for us to wait a year to collect data before thinking about how to move forward with some of these ideas. So there's a lot of money on the table here. We would urge the management to move up the timetable for considering ideas and perhaps save a year in their application of any new ideas to the auction process. Appreciate your consideration.
Any questions for Mr. Braun? Dr. Casey, I'd like to ask. I think part of management's proposal, as I understand it, is to do the kind of monitoring to see the effectiveness as we go along of both tracks, track 1A, track 1B proposals.
Yes, that's correct.
And as to Mr. Braun's request, is there any opportunity to move up the timetable?
Well, I think we do think it's important. These are big changes we're making. These aren't minor changes. They're big changes. And I think the Track 2 process would benefit from getting a meaningful period of time to examine how well these changes work. Now, I'll look to Greg to chime in here, but I would think at a minimum we'd want to have at least 6 months of data to see how effective these changes are, not just from the annual process, but as they roll into the monthly process. Greg, is there any more?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you a little more details on what we're thinking. We were thinking we would start up the Track 2 process mid-next year. That would give us half a year's worth of data. At least we would have some indication as to how the changes in Track 1A and 1B have impacted the market. You know, give us a lot better indication as to what the scope of Track 2 should be, what the prioritization of issues is that we need to resolve. You know, our expectation is we would be considering potentially more comprehensive changes there. I think we also need to look at the allocation process through that initiative. Point being that the stakeholder process starting in mid-2019 probably go through, you know, early to mid-2020. When we look at the timelines for CRRs, that would then give us time to implement those more comprehensive changes in time for the 2021 CRR process. So, you know, by moving this up a couple of months, you don't really save yourself much time because we have to look at the ultimate implementation times from when we could do this. You know, if we were to, you know, finish the stakeholder process a couple months earlier, that wouldn't necessarily mean that we could implement this a whole year earlier for a CRR process, because we have to make sure these things are aligned, and we think, you know, we would get that a lot of benefit out of seeing how the market is reacting to these changes prior to designing further changes.
And I would just underscore the, I think the MSC has been certainly pushing this is, to really make sure you're making the right changes, you've got to have that empirical analysis to really put your finger on what's working, what's not. And so I think not having the benefit of a meaningful time frame with these changes will just be guessing about, you know, what might work and what might not work. So getting the, having that experience, I think, is going to be really critical.
I will add this, though, Mr. Chair, as I think Dr. Casey and Mr. Cook pointed out, we do need some information going forward. Now, keep in mind there's an annual and a monthly process for this. We'll be monitoring it as we go. Obviously, if we see that the intended outcomes are not occurring, I think to Mr. Smith's point, if there's an impact on the markets themselves, or if it's not, or if these changes we're making are not achieving the objectives, I think it would be fair to say we will take some quicker action to deal with those issues. Because I think ultimately what Mr. Braun is trying to say is that this has been an ongoing issue. There are significant costs to load-serving entities. We acknowledge that. And we're mindful, and that's really what's driving our process.
For that assurance, here's one final public comment from Partha Melvadkar, PG&E.
Thanks. Governor Olson, CAISO board members, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today in support of CAISO's CRR proposal. On a positive note, just to clarify some of Greg's comments, we're supportive of both parts of the CAISO's initiative, both the targeted funding approach as well as lowering the amounts allocated in the annual process to 65%. CAISO made a compelling case to us after the stakeholder meeting, and then they got us on board with that part of the proposal as well. Certainly, we also want to thank CAISO's staff and management in their efforts to address the fundamental flaws that we've seen in the CRR market. We really think that these changes we're anticipating will have meaningful impact in terms of both the market inefficiencies and revenue inadequacy we've seen. And we're optimistic that these changes really will produce the results that we're hoping for. Certainly, while PG&E and other stakeholders would have preferred some more fundamental changes to market structure, we really do think that this is a good first step to address the issues, particularly, you know, as the CAISO indicated, they considered a number of changes to the market structure. And we really think that the targeting transmission constraints for the infeasible CRRs is the best of those approaches. Particularly as it'll lower the incentive for market participants to target those CRRs where there are inconsistencies between the CRR market model and the day-ahead market. To the point earlier in terms of stakeholder process, obviously this is a fairly big dollar issue. We appreciate your commitment to continue to look at the market results and to target sort of adopting sort of proposals earlier to the degree that you see flaws in the way that the current proposal is working. We also believe that we recognize, you know, to Greg's point earlier, you know, to adopt, you know, an SEE willing buyer and seller proposal, we would have to have significant effort in order to adopt that. And we certainly would support ongoing meetings to sort of to flesh out how that would work in practice. So that being said, we really appreciate the efforts done to date. You know, we appreciate your commitment to continue to look at the market results and to report back those results to stakeholders, and we'd ideally say to the board as well in terms of how is this working, what are those considerations of other changes to address any additional gaps that might exist. And so thank you, and please let me know if you have any additional questions.
Any questions for Mr. Melvadkar? Thank you very much. So next, we'd like to hear from the Department of Market Monitoring, Ryan Kurlinski.
Good afternoon, Governors. On behalf of DMM, I would like to, you know, really thank the board for its support in addressing you know, this important issue of transmission rate payer losses from the CRR auction. The combination of the Track 1A and Track 1B proposals, you know, should significantly reduce the costs and risks that this that the auction design places on these transmission rate payers. Since the beginning of this initiative, you know, really not that long ago now, the ISO has been able to get substantial safeguards in place in time for the 2019 auction. And that's a testament to the support of the board, the hard work of ISO management, ISO staff, and the hard work and commitment of a whole lot of stakeholders. So thank you. So while we appreciate these steps that management has taken, you know, we were very disappointed to see that that management appears to have decided that it has done, that the ISO has done enough consideration of willing counterparty approaches, right? Approaches that would limit the CRR trades to only be between willing sellers and willing buyers. We felt like this initiative was just starting to get to the heart of these issues. I felt like we were just starting to get to the point where you know, we could have some discussion to weigh the pros and cons of innovative alternatives that could increase the efficiency of wholesale electricity markets. So, you know, to see the ISO decide that it had done enough evaluation of willing counterparty approaches to conclude that the cost of any willing counterparty approach would outweigh the benefits, it was disappointing. You know, but we recognize that the ISO has numerous other important issues to address, you know, such as adding flexibility constraints and 15-minute granularity to the day-ahead market, reforming resource adequacy, RMR, CPM, extending the day-ahead market to other BAAs and enhancing market power mitigation. But we feel the conclusion to stop the discussion on a true market for congestion hedging is premature. We were hopeful that the ISO would continue discussion of this option in the next track of this initiative. That discussion could have included ways of addressing the specific concerns that have been raised with willing counterparty approaches, such as potential adjustments, changes to the allocation process that could be done. So DMM will seek to continue discussion of options for markets that would facilitate the trading of congestion hedges between willing counterparties, options that would avoid the CRR auctions, you know, fundamental flaw of creating large risks for transmission ratepayers who, under the current auction design, and even after these proposals are in place, will still continue to be the forced, you know, unwilling sellers of a large quantity of risky financial swaps. This issue has become the subject of discussion on a broader national level, and DMM looks forward to continuing to try to advance that discussion. We hope the ISO will keep an open mind and continue to consider this issue, and we look forward to working with the ISO and stakeholders in the future on congestion revenue rights market design. So thanks again for your time, and please let me know if you have any questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. Kornlinski?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I think it's a bit disingenuous to accuse executive management of not having ratepayer interests at the top of our mind. The what DMM is proposing is an elimination of the auction. The auction CRRs are deeply tied to how the wholesale market works, and to eliminate the auction and go to willing counterparties, basically you have no market now for people like Mr. Smith to be able to go procure what they need to hedge. So we do have a fundamental difference here. What we don't have a fundamental difference on, though, is our view of how the market needs to be fair and ratepayers need to be protected. And I think to insinuate otherwise is disingenuous. Thank you.
Can,
Would
you like to respond?
I would, yeah. I mean, I don't. I apologize if it seems that we've been insinuating that the ISO does not have the transmission ratepayers' interests in mind. I think this is, like others have said, it's a complicated issue, and I think it's, you know, at the academic level, there's a lot of debate about what the right direction to go is, and I'm not questioning that the ISO thinks that it's doing what is right. It's in the best interest of everybody. I think there's a disagreement on what the right direction to go is.
Ryan, if I might, I think another way of putting what Steve said is the reason we didn't pursue the willing counterparty was not because of a resource constraint on our end or a feeling we had higher priorities. It was because we fundamentally think it's a bad idea. So I think that's the important clarification here.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'd like to turn to comment from the Market Surveillance Committee. Dr. Bushnell.
All right, good afternoon. I'm going to summarize our opinion, which I had thought was going to be a short opinion and turned out not to be. So this was a tougher opinion for us than the first, the 1A, in the sense of kind of clarity and confidence in going forward. We certainly don't oppose this proposal. We wanted to convey in the opinion really sort of a lack of our, at least, quantitative clarity on exactly what the effects are going to be to sort of the generic CRR or the average CRR or something. As Mark put it, there's going to be some degree of a dirty hedge introduced into the system, and we don't have a good feel about how dirty that will be for the average sort of user of a CRR. We do agree with a lot of the statements that this proposal, by targeting certain constraints that become infeasible, or really that's sort of targeting the CRRs that have been sold that turned out to have been oversold. And so they sold too much transmission capacity. We need to somehow recoup that revenue. And by targeting it to the areas that are no longer feasible when you run the market, it is directly affecting the types of auction sort of strategies that have raised concern and are probably causing a lot of the auction revenue shortfall. The question is exactly how much effect this has on other owners of allocated and auctioned rights. And I think there's reason to believe that their effects are going to be more modest, but we would have liked to see more quantitative support of that. I think, as Keith Casey was saying, as far as kind of rolling forward with the next initiative, you know, we kind of would like to see some data on exactly what the current things are doing, even at this point, let alone sort of before we start introducing even more changes there. So we did suggest, you know, just some ideas in terms of how we might limit those bounds, and one of those suggestions was releasing less capacity under the theory that if the problem is overselling capacity ex post, that releasing less of it reduces the need for clawing back that revenue and hopefully mitigates the effect of the other parts of the proposal. And that was the spirit of that. And so we obviously support that. And I guess just going forward, I think it's important to kind of keep an open mind here. We are trying multiple changes simultaneously, and we're not sure exactly what the impacts are going to be on both the auction and on the allocated rights. And so we do want to understand what's going on, and I think it's very possible we would want to make further adjustments at some point. And it's also there's a lot of reason to believe that this is going to affect most of what we see as the problem with the auction revenue shortfall, and it is definitely going to deal with the revenue inadequacy because by design it's meant to recoup those revenues. Thanks.
I will confess that, and I've been on this board for 7 years, and CRRs have always been the thing that makes me beat my head against the wall. And so there are two questions they're linked that I don't understand. One is, several people have expressed concerns that even with these changes, there would continue to be uplifts to load. And I don't understand, and I'm not sure if this question for you or for Greg, but I don't understand how that's possible if we're dealing with the revenue inadequacy problem by allocating it to CRR holders, how there would still be uplift to load. And the second question, and it's related to this one, is imagine a world in which what Ellen, the concern Ellen and Mark raised, which is that bidding is going to go down in the auction. Imagine that world. What happens next? Who does that impact?
Okay, so to try to get my head around this, I think of the two sets of problems as somewhat distinct. The auction revenue shortfall is we sold some, or on behalf of load, rights were sold, turned out to be sold for a price that was lower than what they ex post turned out to be worth. The revenue inadequacy problem is we sold some rights that turns out didn't actually exist because the capacity of the system was below what we thought it would be at the time the sale happened. And so this is addressing that second problem, and I think Greg can correct me here. I think it depends on how you define a uplift payment, but uplift payments in support of the revenue inadequacy problems should go away as a result of this. The idea of there being a auction revenue shortfall, which isn't a literal uplift payment, it's sort of a foregone opportunity to collect revenues that might ex post have been higher. So I think that's how I would answer your first question. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, I would just add, you know, load does own a significant amount of the CRR. So when we're doing the partial funding proposal and we're taking revenue back, some of that is being covered by load, but only in now proportion to how many CRRs they would hold on that constraint.
Yeah, there's overlap between parties all the and then your second has to do with, okay, we're making these rights a little less certain. That's probably going to lower their market value, so the auction revenues would go down. But again, the idea would be, yes, the auction, the revenues in the auction are going to go down, but the payments associated with those rights are going to go down even more, and so the shortfall decreases. At least that's the design and intent here.
Any other questions for Dr. Bushnell? Angelina or Richard?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much. So, Mr. Collington, I think we are ready for a resolution.
Move that the ISO Board of Governors approves the proposal to implement the congestion revenue rights auction efficiency track 1B changes described in the memorandum dated June 14, 2018, and move that the ISO Board of Governors authorizes management to make all necessary and appropriate filings with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to implement the proposal, including any filings that implement the overarching initiative policy but contain discrete revisions to incorporate Commission guidance in any initial ruling on the proposed tariff amendment.
So moved.
Well, here we have Angelina moving and Mark second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Thank you, Governors.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Collington. So, our next order of business is a decision on a participating transmission owner application for Citizens Sycamore Penasquitos Transmission.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Olson. On this item, we're seeking your approval for Citizens Sycamore Penasquitos Transmission. If there's ever a name that needed an acronym, that would be it. to become a participating transmission owner, conditioned on certain additional things happening. So Don Kareen, our senior contracts negotiator, will be presenting this item to you.
Thank you. Hello, Governors. I'm Dawn Kareen, Senior Contracts Negotiator, here to tell you about the Citizens Sycamore Penasquitos Transmission LLC application process to become the ISO's 18th participating transmission owner. In March of 2014, the ISO selected SDG&E in conjunction with Citizens Energy as the approved project sponsor to finance, construct, own, operate, and maintain the Sycamore Penasquitos project. Under a separate agreement, Citizens Energy has an option to lease approximately 13% of the transfer capability in an underground segment of the Sycamore to Penasquitos 230 kV transmission project located in San Diego County for 30 years. Citizens Energy will assign and transfer all of its rights, obligations, and regulatory approvals to its wholly owned sub-subsidiary, Citizens Sycamore Penasquitos Transmission, LLC. As required under the agreement with SDG&E and the Transmission Control Agreement, Citizens Sycamore Penasquitos Transmission will turn over operational control of its transmission assets to the ISO. The amended Transmission Control Agreement was executed this week and will be filed with FERC tomorrow, pending your authorization. Citizens Sycamore Penasquitos Transmission agreed to all of the terms and conditions necessary for the ISO to assume operational control of its transmission assets. All of the efforts previously described hinge on the board accepting Citizens Sycamore Penasquitos Transmission's application to become a participating transmission owner. The process for becoming a participating transmission owner is quite detailed. Citizens Sycamore Penasquitos Transmission submitted its application to the ISO on April 13th. That application was posted on the ISO website for 60 days. The board accepts the application, that's why I'm here now. Citizens Sycamore Penasquitos Transmission also executed the amended transmission control agreement on Tuesday, as did the ISO and other relevant parties. And then FERC issues an order making the amended transmission control agreement effective around August 21st. The ISO is prepared to make that filing with FERC of the amended transmission control agreement tomorrow. Board acceptance of Citizens Sycamore Penasquitos Transmission application is warranted for the following reasons. The application of Citizens Sycamore Penasquitos Transmission was publicly noticed and posted on the ISO website for 60 days, which concluded on June 12th. No comments were received on the application of Citizens Sycamore Penasquitos Transmission's application. And during negotiation of the transmission control agreement amendment, none of the 17 participating transmission owner parties to the agreement raised any concerns to the amendments adding Sycamore Citizens Penasquitos as the 18th participating transmission owner party. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Corrine? Thank you very much. So we have a comment from Pete Smith of Citizens Energy, representing CSPT.
Thank you, Chair Olson. I have to apologize for the awkwardness of the subsidiary name. Joe would be horrified if he heard us everybody talking about his company as Citizens Sycamore Penasquitos Transmission. Let's just call the parent company Citizens Energy. So first of all, I want to thank the Cal ISO Board of Governors for the opportunity to speak here this afternoon about our partnership with San Diego Gas and Electric on the Sycamore Penasquitos Transmission Line. Citizens Energy, the parent company, as you may know, is a different kind of energy company. We were founded by former Congressman Joe Kennedy nearly 40 years ago, and we basically use profits from successful energy ventures to fund programs for low-income households with their basic needs, most specifically energy needs. We were very proud of our work with San Diego Gas and Electric on the Sunrise Power Link, which brought our first Cal ISO approval as a PTO on the maybe more elegantly named Citizens Sunrise Transmission back in 2012. And since that agreement, Citizens has invested over $10 million in the Imperial Valley on putting solar panels on the tops of low-income households' roofs at no cost to the homeowner and saving them a lot of money each year on their electricity needs.
Next year, still using the profits from that transmission line, we're going to be launching an innovative 30-megawatt ground mount community solar project so we can help even more low-income households in the Imperial Valley from the Sunrise Project. You know, and over the years, we've been very fortunate to develop some close relationships with the CalISO senior staff, with Steve Berberick, Tom Dowdy, Neil Millar, and Keith Casey. And, you know, our unique transmission partnership really wouldn't be possible without the vision of the CalISO looking beyond kind of the rote practices of the past to find ways, unique ways, we think, of delivering power to the people. So today, as Don mentioned, we're here to seek approval of our application on the Sycamore-Penasquitos transmission line, which is a 230 kV, 15-mile transmission line in San Diego County. And as Don mentioned, under the terms of that agreement, we're going to lease transmission capacity on that line for 30 years and use 50% of the profits we earn to create programs for low-income ratepayers in San Diego County to ensure that they can see the benefits of the electrification of the transportation sector and perhaps even help them pay for and get into electric vehicles. You know, Joe Kennedy, our chairman and founder, he's fully committed to an energy future where every household, not just the wealthy households, can play a part in securing a green economy, cutting down on fossil fuel consumption, and trying to slow down global warming. So we're very excited about this project and our partnership with San Diego Gas and Electric, which we think is setting a pretty high green bar for utilities around the country. We also appreciate our relationship with enlightened regulators like the CalISO, which is helping California and keeping California in the forefront of both national and global energy policy. So the bottom line here is that you're helping us fulfill our mission, and we hope to take another step along that path today with the approval of our PTO application on this project. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about our role in the project if anybody has any.
Any questions for Mr. Smith? Thank you very much. I want to say that we really appreciate your business model that really focuses on bringing benefits of electrification to low-income communities across the state and the projects that you've invested in. And we appreciate your traveling all the way from Boston to be here today. So
my pleasure. Thank you, Chairman Olson.
Are there any other agenda items?
Well, we do need a motion.
I'm sorry.
I don't get to talk.
We're ready for the resolution.
I don't get to talk too often, Dave, and it's hard for me when I don't get to talk, so don't take that away from me. Move that the ISO Board of Governors approves the ISO's acceptance of the application of Citizen Sycamore-Penasquitos Transmission LLC for participating transmission owner status, conditioned on 1, CSPT executing the transmission control agreement, and 2, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission accepting a transmission owner tariff and transmission revenue requirement for CSPT. And I understand that Richard is back on the line, so we should have all five governors. Mark moves. Any second? Austin second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? I did hear Richard say aye. So we have 5-0. Thank you, governors. Angelina enjoyed that.
Oh, sorry.
She's going to be losing
back on mute, Angelina.
And are there other agenda items for today? If not, we're adjourned. Thank you very much all for coming.
Thank you, governors.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.